If Charlie Kirk was not a household name internationally, he is now. Across the United States, flags at half-mast on government buildings this Thursday after an assassination that bears the markings of a professional hit job. It was President Trump himself who broke the news of the death of the 31-year-old MAGA influencer on Truth Social. We'll ask about circumstances of the shooting at a university campus talk in Utah. We'll measure the impact Kirk's powerful messaging could make his masculinist, anti-woke nationalist views seem hip and cool to young people. And the backlash in a nation where social media-fueled vitriol has led to real-life shootings, like the one that targeted Donald Trump himself. Trump, who's evoked wartime powers to militarize his response to immigration and crime, what kind of response to expect to the killing of a figure from the front lines of America's culture wars? Today in the France 24 debate, we're asking about the assassination of Charlie Kirk. With us is Vivian Walt, Paris correspondent for Time magazine. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
With us from Washington, D.C., Jamie Kirchick, global reporter for Axel Springer. Good to see you.
Hi, thank you.
From New Orleans, Ian Fowle, editor-in-chief of Tulane University's student newspaper, the Tulane Hullabaloo. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for having me.
And from Lille in the north of France, Sarah Rodriguez-Louette, researcher in American civilization at Sorbonne Nouvelle University. Welcome.
Thank you.
On the go, you can listen to the show wherever podcasts are streamed. Yeah, the shots rang out as Charlie Kirk was arguing the point against gun control at an outdoor speech organized by his Turning Point USA youth organization. This was on the campus of Utah Valley University. Karis Garland has more.
Appealing to the public for help, the FBI released these photos of what they called a person of interest in the investigation into the killing of right-wing activist Charlie Kirk. Earlier on Thursday at a press briefing, authorities said they had recovered what they believe to be the weapon used in the shooting.
It is a high-powered bolt-action rifle. That rifle was recovered in a wooded area where the shooter had fled. Investigators have also collected footwear impression, a palm print, and forearm imprints for analysis.
Kirk was killed while speaking at a debate hosted by his political youth organization on Wednesday. He was taking questions from an audience member about gun violence when the shot rang out. Kirk is credited with helping build support for the Republican Party among younger voters in the lead-up to the election of Donald Trump. At a September 11 commemoration event, Trump paid tribute to the podcaster. He announced he would posthumously award him with the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest U.S. civilian honor.
Charlie was a giant of his generation, a champion of liberty, and an inspiration to millions and millions of people. We miss him greatly, yet I have no doubt that Charlie's voice and the courage he put into the hearts of countless people, especially young people, will live on.
Vice President J.D. Vance canceled a trip to New York to commemorate the 9/11 attacks on Thursday so he could travel to Utah to visit Kirk's grieving family.
And before we go to our panel, let's go to correspondent Wassim Cornet. Wassim, as we've heard, that we saw there's been this appeal put out by the FBI. They're even offering a $100,000 reward, as well as those pictures of that person of interest.
Yeah, and it was started off with a bit of a fumble on the day of the shooting. Very quickly after that shot rang out, we saw videos and pictures circulating on social media of an older white man being detained hogtied on the ground and being arrested by police. Everybody thought that that was the suspect that was in custody. He was charged with obstruction of justice, but released afterwards. He had no link to that shooting. And then later in the afternoon, both the head of the FBI, Cash and the head of Utah Public Commissioner of Public Safety said that there was a person of interest, a suspect in custody. That person was also later released. Neither of those two men, again, believed to have any link with that shooting. But so much confusion still, but investigators do look like they do have a definitive or at least an idea of who this person might be. Again, those pictures released by the FBI earlier today showing a white man dressed with in long black sleeve shirts, sunglasses, a hat. He appears to be, according to investigators, of college age, which would have allowed him to blend into the crowd. And alongside that rifle that was recovered in a nearby wooded area was a screwdriver, which leads investigators to believe that the rifle was disassembled and then reassembled on the spot, which allowed him to bring that rifle into the campus unnoticed. But it looks like investigators have their work cut out for him. The fact that he was able to come into campus, leave campus unnoticed, that single shot from quite a distance, 200 meters away, shot right in the neck. The fact that there was just that rifle that might have been disassembled and reassembled. It looks like this person clearly was operating a very methodical manner.
A very methodical manner. And you mentioned those false starts in the FBI's investigation. Is that just par for the course? Sometimes you get bad leads, or is there a problem here?
Well, let's talk about, I feel like we should differentiate between those two separate arrests. That first arrest, clearly it was made by campus police. Initially, it was actually the university itself, Utah Valley University, that announced that arrest. So clearly those police officers that are employed by the university made that arrest based on whatever information they had, based on perhaps something that they saw, that they noticed. We have heard reports on social media, this is unconfirmed, that that person might have yelled something to the effect of "I would do it again," so that might have been an encouragement or a reason for those police officers to take that person into custody. But then, of course, fast forward to a couple of hours later when that second person was arrested, announced initially by the head of the FBI himself on his X or Twitter account. But you have to maybe understand why this is such a sensitive topic for the MAGA movement, for the conservative right. Clearly, this is one of their leaders, one of their heroes that has been assassinated in broad daylight in front of thousands of people. And clearly there is a desire to get this investigation or move forward with this investigation as quickly as possible.
Wasim, one quick final question. You're in liberal Los Angeles as we're speaking, but I imagine that where you are, as with everywhere else, there's a lot of conflict over how to digest this news.
I think most people here would agree that political violence is not a good thing, and that has been reflected by many public statements by elected officials, even in liberal California, liberal Los Angeles, very quickly after that initial shooting, before we had even heard that Charlie Kirk had died. Governor of California Gavin Newsom, again, condemning political violence, saying this was not the solution. But across the board, or at least in liberal parts of the state, there is perhaps surprise or anger at the fact that there is widespread mourning across the U.S. For example, the decision to order all flags at half staff for 4 days by the U.S. president. That is seen by many as excessive, perhaps even hypocritical, noting that there was no similar reaction when a Minnesota state lawmaker and her husband were killed in a home invasion by a politically motivated assailant back in the month of June. No similar reaction from the U.S. president. So a lot of people noting that hypocrisy, especially considering the fact that Charlie Kirk was, at the end of the day, a civilian. He never ran for public office, never was elected for public office.
Yeah, many thanks for that. Wasim Cornet reporting live there from Los Angeles. And we've gotten word in the last minutes that Charlie Kirk's casket will be flown aboard the vice president's plane, Air Force Two, to travel to Arizona on Thursday. The Pentagon released images from an undisclosed location of U.S. War Secretary Pete Hegseth leading soldiers in prayer. Vivian Walt, your reaction to those images?
Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day.
I mean, this is a very disturbing moment for the U.S. I think it doesn't matter what you think about Charlie Kirk's ideas, which were very controversial. Obviously, half the country virulently disagrees with what he says, and half the country loves him. But the idea that you have this increasing, ramped up militarization, this war talk. You have Steve Bannon on his podcast today, which is called The War Room, talking about how the country is at war. Social media is full of war talk today. And even as all the pundits and the analysts say we have to dial down the rhetoric and we have to learn how to talk to each other, all the signs are that the U.S. is going in the opposite direction.
I got to say, James Kirchick, people here in France who didn't know necessarily who Charlie Kirk was, unsettled by what they're seeing from the United States and also quizzical because of the modus operandi, a single shot from 200 meters in what looks like some kind of professional job.
No, it's a very disturbing event. And it's more than just an assassination of an individual. I should say that, you know, he leaves behind two young children and a widow now. And that's terrible. And that though they really are the people that we should be thinking about in the aftermath of this tragedy. But this was also an attack on American democracy. Because whatever you think of Charlie Kirk's politics, what he did, I thought, was very admirable. And I did not agree with a lot of what he stood for. But he would go to college campuses, and he would sit in the middle of the quad, and he would engage in debates, peaceful, civil debates with college students, which is all too rare in this country, where you have an ideological, basically, capture by the left of most of the American universities in this country. And for someone like him to go into the belly of the beast and go and argue with these kids in a civil manner, I think was a very admirable activity. And for all of us who are involved in political debate in this country, whether we're politicians or activists like Charlie Kirk or journalists like myself, we are now going to have to think twice now about how we engage in these sorts of public events. I can tell you that right now, that you're going to see a lot less outdoor public events on college campuses. You're going to see security checks beefed up at any sort of political event, even ones where no politicians appear. I mean, let's not forget, Charlie Kirk was not a politician. He didn't have a Secret Service detail. He had to have private security around him wherever he went, because that is the level of danger that now exists for people engaging in politics in the United States.
Ian Fowle, what's the mood like on the campus of Tulane University in New Orleans?
Well, considering that this is so fresh, right, it's sort of hard to take the temperature of the whole campus. But last night, you know, it was the newspaper's production night, where I'm the editor-in-chief. And in the newsroom, people were sort of shocked. A lot of people had just heard about it before coming into the office. And especially among young students, videos of the assassination, really brutal ones, were being viewed on, you know, Instagram and TikTok and other social media. I think that was largely responsible for the unsettled air in the room. As far as the rest of campus, Tulane is sort of unique in that it's located in a relatively liberal city. It's a relatively liberal campus, but it's in a deeply conservative state, Louisiana. And we have a diverse student population along some axes too, not just, you know, racially or whatnot. So I don't think there's a unified voice among students about the killing of Charlie Kirk. But I think overall people are generally unsettled and upset by it in whatever direction that may be.
James Kirchick just made that it will perhaps make it harder to have open debate, and that there people will think twice before speaking their minds at a campus event. Is that something that you're thinking of, that your friends are thinking of?
Yes. I think as student journalists, it's something we're thinking of. Last night, we had to make a decision about whether we published anything about the killing. The sad situation is that, you know, we have to balance the public's need for for information with the safety of our journalists. So there was some concern about receiving backlash about our reporting on the recent events. As far as the other student organizations on campus, I'm not so sure. We're in the process of reaching out to them for comments, taking their temperature. But yes, I think I would reiterate that I would expect that security on campus is going to be ramped up for all sorts of events, for all public speaking events. Just today on a street passing through the center of campus, I noticed there were barricades. I'm not sure if they were preemptive or if there was a planned protest. I was not able to see. But already, even before this inflammatory event, there has been active discussion on campus about whether Tulane should invite conservative speakers to a variety of forums. And a lot of vitriol among students has, been incited.
Sarah Rodriguez-Luet, your reaction to that, and how much of a conversation is it among French academics? I know that the school year as such at universities here hasn't properly started for most, but did people know who Charlie Kirk was, and do people have the same kind of conflicts in France that Ian was just describing on the campus of that university in Tulane?
Yeah, Charlie Kirk was not very famous in France, but basically on social media, I've never seen such anger. He has become a symbol now. He was, the newspaper, the outlets tend to describe him as an extremist in the United States and even in France. But we have to understand that from the point of view of the right, of his supporters and people who could support him even in France, he was deemed a decent Christian person. And so there is a kind of identification. I've read lots of messages such as, if they want to kill Charlie Kirk, they would want to kill me as well. See? So that's a very important point. And now in France, yes, he has become a symbol of this resistance, we could say. Resistance against the left, as they say, woke politics, and a kind of narrative that is painted by the media and academics.
The event where Charlie Kirk was killed, again, was billed as a prove me wrong conference, a nod to his enthusiasm for arguing the point. Peter O'Brien has more on an icon who is just 31.
And under Kamala Harris, she has said that
Charlie Kirk became a star of the MAGA movement by going where other conservative activists would not, college campuses, like the one where he was killed. From the age of 18, Kirk toured universities with his organization Turning Point USA, spreading the message that it's cool to be young, evangelical, and pro-Trump, all the while amassing countless clips framed as him humiliating left-wing students.
What is a woman? This is not a trick question, everybody. You're in college, paying for an education. What is a woman?
The far-right activist attacked abortion rights, gun control, homosexuality, and minorities, and promoted conspiracy theories about vaccines and the 2020 election.
Of course it was stolen, and we're going to win this time. When you sign a letter that says the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation, that was stolen from the American people in information warfare.
In Utah 2 years ago, he made one of his more controversial statements.
I think it's worth to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year so that we can have the Second Amendment to protect our other God-given rights.
Raised in a politically moderate household in a rich suburb of Chicago, Kirk owed his political awakening to the financial crash of 2008. A college dropout, Kirk was personal aide to Donald Trump's son during his first campaign in 2016. Soon he was a regular presence on Fox News, and Turning Point began raking in tens of millions of dollars in donations. Kirk's college campaigning and huge internet following helped drive the critical youth vote in favor of Donald Trump in last year's election.
And Vivian Walt, this targeting of the young, it used to be that young people tended to trend more leftwards. Here in Europe, we're seeing similar patterns, particularly here in France, particularly among young men.
Absolutely. And in Britain, Italy is already under far-right prime ministership, but certainly in France and in Germany, right-wing parties are totally ascendant, and part of that has to do with the youth vote. But what's interesting, looking at Charlie Kirk, is that in some ways he reminds me a lot of the mayoral candidate, Zoran Mamdani, same generation.
From New York City, who's on the left.
Absolutely. And actually, if you listen to what Charlie Kirk had to say, particularly if you listen to, he did an hour-long podcast with Gavin Newsom, who possibly defines the resistance against President Trump, the governor of California. And they say very similar things, Charlie Kirk and Zoran Mamdani, speaking as the younger generation, a generation who basically feels that they've been kind of screwed over by the system, if you'll excuse my language, and who will never be live as well as their parents' generation, who can't afford to rise above where they are now. They almost echo each other. And the problem is, in America, well, there's several problems. One problem is that the leadership of the country is so utterly divided. There's no bipartisan dialogue going on. If you look at the debates in Congress, such as they are, there's really very little sort of intelligent conversational, coming to some common ground at all. And added to that, you have a country that is not Europe. It's a country with very lax gun laws, as Charlie Kirk just himself spoke about. In Utah, they have you're allowed to carry a weapon onto a college campus, into a public building. That is not Europe. I mean, you had the attack on the Capitol January 6th, in which hundreds of people were able to get into the Capitol with weapons. So I don't think we should be too quick to make parallels with what's going on in Europe.
Let me ask you, James Kirchick, you have Vivian there talking about the similarities between Charlie Kirk and that candidate for mayor of New York City, who's only 2 years older than him, 33. But of course, it's not at all the same message. And we heard those clips, including conspiracy theories about the 2020 election. Is it the same, though? Do they have more in common than more that separate them, those two?
I think the similarity is really just at the surface level. They're both very charismatic individuals who are great on social media and in audience. But other than that, I really don't see any significant similarities. The significant similarity that I see, particularly in reaction to this terrible event over the past, 12 hours or so, has been between the right in America and the right in Europe. And I can't think of another time, certainly in my lifetime, and really in recent history, where there's been such a synthesis between the American right and the European right. This kind of crossover, this cross-pollination between Nigel Farage and the Reform Party in the UK, which is the most popular party in the UK now, with MAGA, and Marine Le Pen in her movements with MAGA, and with the AfD in Germany, and you see Elon Musk and J.D. Vance are basically intervening in the German elections in support of the AfD. This is a new phenomenon. I mean, I don't recall George W. Bush, the Republicans in that era of George W. Bush, or even in the 90s, having so much in common with Angela Merkel and, Sarkozy and the other, European leaders on the center right in Europe. And I think we've seen now the sort of nationalist populist right has really converged. And they're obviously not all the same, but they all do have the same concerns, right? National identity, immigration, the culture, a resentment towards elites and sort of liberal elites, academia, the mainstream media. So this is a fascinating convergence that I've really picked up on just the past day or so.
By the way, Kirk's organization, Turning Point, has foreign chapters. And as France marks the 10th anniversary of the Paris attacks, the UK chapter posted to the slogan that went viral here in France after jihadists decimated the newsroom of satirical weekly Charlie Hebdo. They posted to Twitter, "Je suis Charlie." Let me get your reaction, Sarah Rodriguez-Louette, to this is an association close to Nigel Farage, to that reaction, using the slogan, "Je suis Charlie."
Yes, there is a whole network that is anti-Muslims, and to say the word. So Charlie Kirk considered Islam as a threat to civilization. And so we have the same words, the same slogans in Europe against immigration, against Muslim immigration, sorry. So as you said, this is a whole network and this is quite new. We have the same narrative, the same frames and the same solutions, but for different problems. Charlie Kirk focused on Muslim immigration because it was in opposition to Israel. In France, in Europe, it's quite different. It's because of the immigration crisis, obviously. But we can find the same words saying and proving that they originate from the same think tanks, we could say.
Ian Fowle, let me ask you, on college campuses, the appeal of Charlie Kirk, is it culture wars message of his, this MAGA message, or is it what Vivian was referencing earlier, and that is sort of a generational divide?
I can't say that at Tulane University, where I am, Charlie Kirk's message rings very loudly. I do know that we have or recently had a chapter of Turning Point USA, but it is not something that most students have heard of or engaged with. To my knowledge, we have not hosted Charlie Kirk ever at Tulane, or at least since I've been there, in the 4 years that I've been there. As far as a generational divide, I think this could be true. Could you elaborate a bit more on that? What do you mean by that?
The feeling, what Vivian was saying, how young people feel that the older generation has screwed them over.
Okay. Yes, I think that's a common thread through all political movements that we're seeing on college campuses. At Tulane, the one that's particularly prominent is the pro-Palestine movement and the Zionist students. Tulane has a remarkably large Jewish population, something like 40% of students. And recently, those two groups clashed, and there was some violence following, you know, the attack on October 7th and later that year as well.
Go ahead.
No, you can go ahead. It's fine.
Well, I was going to ask you, what about the gender divide? Charlie Kirk with a masculinist message, his movement, by the way, garnering more and more support from women, women who believe in traditional values, that the role of when it comes to male and female roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I haven't picked up on that so much at Tulane. I do know that there was a recent poll showing that the support for free speech on college campuses, including at Tulane, was different among male and female students, with female students being less open to inviting strong conservative or, you know, strong liberal viewpoints to campus if it would offend or potentially harm a marginalized group on campus. Whereas I think among male students across the school sampled, it was over 50% supported, bringing in speakers from, you know, a diversity of extreme views. I think at Tulane, of course, we sort of lean liberal. It can be sometimes like an echo chamber with students being afraid to express divergent opinions in public forums. This is something that I receive letters about, you know, at the newspaper. But in general, yeah, it doesn't really enter into the mainstream of university culture. It's an undercurrent, I suppose.
The reaction to Charlie Kirk's assassination has pundits walking on eggshells, it seems. Liberal MSNBC cable news channel firing one of its political commentators, a man by the name of Matthew Dowd, who during a discussion after the shooting stated the following: "I always go back to hateful thoughts lead to hateful words, which lead to hateful actions. And I think this is the environment we're in. You can't stop with these sort of awful thoughts. You have to then saying these awful words and not expect awful actions to take place. And that's the unfortunate environment we are in." Did he deserve, James Kirchick, to be fired for that?
I think Matthew Dowd deserved to be fired a long time ago because he's not a particularly interesting person who has anything interesting to say, but we'll put that aside. I mean, look, this is a tired explanation we always hear in the wake of someone being killed for their constitutionally protected speech or their free expression. You and I both know that 10 years ago in the aftermath of Charlie Hebdo, there were lots of people on both sides, on all sides of the political spectrum, who were saying that Charlie Hebdo deserved it. In fact, Gary Trudeau, okay, probably the most famous American cartoonist of Doonesbury, very well-regarded decades-long newspaper cartoon, he came out and basically said that they were punching down, that they were racist, and they deserved it. And he was a fellow cartoonist. So, you know, as someone who writes and speaks for a living, I have no tolerance for this sort of talk. It's always wrong, okay? Murdering someone because of their free expression is never justified under any circumstances, no matter how hateful or bigoted or offensive you think it is. And the person who is murdered is not not guilty of their own murder. End of story.
Vivian Walt, when you look at the current context in the United States and... you know, again, we talked about it at the outset, the U.S. president who began his speech at the 9/11 commemorations at the Pentagon with a tribute to Charlie Kirk. The prayers we saw led by the Secretary of War in front of those soldiers. Your thoughts on again, there is free speech, and then there's also the weight of the executive branch of government these days.
Well, absolutely. And the president began his Oval Office address last night by saying that the radical left, so to speak, was directly responsible, was his phrase. So we don't even have anybody in custody. It's still unknown what this person's political motivations might have been or whether he's, you know, completely apolitical and just crazy. We really don't know. But that's the immediate conclusion that was laid down by the president within hours of Charlie Kirk dying and picked up by social media from Steve Bannon on out. So I'm not that hopeful. We're one day into this, 24 hours into this, and although there's been a lot of like heartfelt messages about needing to come together, and certainly this was a horrific killing, no matter what you think of Charlie Kirk. He was a young man with two little kids and just actually, as James pointed out, he had made his name by being somebody who reached out to people who didn't agree with him. And that was threatening enough to cost him his life.
All right. There are those, and again, on this issue of whether Donald Trump will leave it to blaming of the opposing camp or whether he'll take it any further, there are those on the left referencing the 1933 Reichstag fire, the arson attack on the German parliament that Hitler used as an excuse to suspend civil liberties. New York Times columnist Ezra Klein gauged reactions from both sides on social media. He wrote that one is a move on the left to wrap Kirk's death around his views. After all, he defended the Second Amendment, even admitting it meant accepting innocent deaths. Another on the right is to turn Kirk's murder into a justification for an all-out war, a Reichstag fire for our time. But as the list above reveals, there is no world in which political violence escalates but is contained to just your foes. Is it a Reichstag fire moment, Vivian Walt?
I think that is the real fear. And it's been the fear several times this year. The Minnesota killings, the arson attack, attempted assassination, in fact, of the governor of Pennsylvania just in April. And the list goes on. So I think many times, obviously I'm not living in America, but I am American, and many times there are moments in which I've thought, how does the country come back from this? I'm not sure. I think we need to hear from Ian and James, perhaps, sitting in America.
Well, let's begin with you, James.
How do we come back from this? Well, we've had, Vivian surely knows that we went through much more, I don't want to say significant, but much more, I would say, impactful or severe political assassinations in this country. John F. Kennedy, his brother Robert, and Martin Luther King in the 1960s. And the country survived. There was a lot of destruction, obviously. And I would actually say, in some sense, the country has not survived the Kennedy assassination in particular, and that really sort of kicked off the era of conspiracy theory.
Will Donald Trump succeed in making Charlie Kirk a Martin Luther King for his movement?
I don't know if Donald Trump wants to do that. I don't think it's an appropriate comparison for several reasons. But I do, I worry in the sense that at least what I'm seeing online are a lot of conservatives saying, you know, we tried to be peaceful with you people. We tried to follow your rules. Charlie Kirk was a moderate, you know, compared to what's going to come after him, right? Like, he actually wanted to talk to you and engage with you and behave in a civil manner. And I'm concerned that you're going to see people, you know, they're going to be moving from red pill to black pill. You know, black pill is like nihilism. And that's where things will get really dangerous. And I really hope we do not go down that path.
Ian Fowle, this too shall pass, or do you share these concerns? I know Tulane University is one of those institutions that has been targeted by the Trump administration because of its academics.
Yeah, I would reiterate that. I am concerned, but I have been concerned for a while now about the state of political violence and gun violence in America. I think one recent event that we haven't discussed here so much is the killing of, you know, CEO of UnitedHealthcare, Brian Thompson, where in a similar sense, there was a lot of, approval for his assassination, especially among liberal groups who felt like, and young people who felt like they couldn't afford healthcare. But I think, though, that it's really important to recognize now, if not then, that a killing can simultaneously be wrong and understandable. We can acknowledge some shared sympathy and even rage, but not let that undermine the deep moral concern, the deep concern that even the level of public health that this person was brutally killed. We have to be capable of, you know, understanding that these people are very multidimensional. Along one axis, I very much disagree with Charlie Kirk. I think that some of the things that he said and the way that he made minority groups feel was reprehensible. But as others have said, along other axes, he was probably, he probably had friends and he was a father. So these are things I hope to keep in mind, and I hope other people do too. I hope everyone stays safe.
Sarah Rodriguez-Lewitt, when you look at the United States, yeah, there was, as Ian was just referencing, there was this CEO of a insurance company who was killed in New York City. His suspected assassin has become something of a folk hero to many. Again, is this part of the? Is that where the parallel should be drawn?
I think this is both similar and different, because here with this assassination, Charlie Kirk was an icon in the United States and on social media, as I said, but the right now has a very powerful narrative with a hero and enemies, and that's the difference. Now Democrats are framed as enemies, and people on social media tend to compile screenshots and videos cheering the death of Charlie Kirk. And it creates the representation of an evil, as they say, an evil crowd, a hateful crowd. And it creates as well the perception of a deep divide with the right, good people, decent people, Christian people, and the left, hateful extremist people, now that kill. And as you said as well, they don't know who the killer is. So it's just a narrative that is created. At this point, finally, the identity of the person of interest is not very important. It creates, and this divide becomes a story, a narrative with archetypes, finally. And that's why this is very dangerous, because they talk about war and Donald Trump talks about crushing these people without mentioning who these people are. And so we can only guess what his reaction will be.
All right. Among the other, by the way, reactions, let's just give one from abroad, that of Vladimir Putin's negotiator with the United States, Kirill Dmitriev. On X, formerly Twitter, citing the tweet of U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance, pray for Charlie, voices of light will not be silenced, he says. And then below that, he retweets Elon Musk, who stated the left is the party of murder. And this is happening, of course, we're here in Europe, we're concerned over those drones that went from Russia into Poland on Wednesday. And here you were getting statements saying that the left is the party of murder. Your thoughts?
You know, I'm in some way, I'm going to reverse what I said a little while back.
Go ahead.
Of course, things like this do tap into an existing feeling of vulnerability and anxiety in Europe that has, you know, continued for 3.5 years of the Ukraine war. We are very near. We are a two-hour flight. If there were planes allowed to fly over Ukraine, we could fly to Kyiv in 2 hours from Paris. And so this is not some remote threat. And when I really do think that when things like this happen, when political violence is again the topic of the day, it's very resonant in Europe at the moment. We see it, we feel it. We are daily thinking about the fact that there's some existential threat to this continent, and that there's also a very rising, fast rising feeling of hardcore nationalism in this region. And I think all of that does actually make this event quite resonant.
Vivian Walt, we'll have to leave it there, unfortunately. So much more to talk about. I want to thank you. I want to thank Ian Fowle for joining us from New Orleans, James Kirchick from Washington, Sarah Rodriguez-Louette from the northern French city of Lille. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.
Thank you.